morning, listeners. Welcome to this week's edition of Thursday in the Doghouse. I'm your host, Rini Premeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer. Our 30-minute program is always full of helpful information for the dog-owning community or anyone who just loves dogs. But today, we're all going to be in the cat house with Dr. Nicholas Dodman, who will be talking today about cat medical issues and behavior problems. But before we talk to Dr. Dodman, please let me tell you what services I offer as a professional dog trainer and behavior consultant in the South Jersey area. Is your dog always in the doghouse? Does he greet people by jumping all over them? Does she chew your shoes and steal your undies? Guess what? Your dog needs training. Hi, I'm Rini Premeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, and I train dogs using only positive-based methods. My services include private training right in your own home. I also offer group puppy kindergarten classes starting at 8 weeks of age and group classes for adolescent and adult dogs beginning at 5 months of age. All group classes are held at Dog Days Camp for Canines, 23 West Main Street, Marlton, New Jersey. For more information, please contact me at 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Again, that's 609-280-9338 or on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. My guest today is Dr. Nicholas Dodman, who is a diplomate of the American College of Veterinary Behaviorists, and he's a professor, section head, and program director of the Animal Behavior Department of Clinical Sciences at Tufts Cummings School of Veterinary Medicine. He is one of the world's most noted and celebrated veterinary behaviorists. Dr. Dodman has written 4 acclaimed best-selling books, The Dog Who Loved Too Much, The Cat Who Cried for Help, Dogs Behaving Badly, and The Well-Adjusted Dog. Good morning, Dr. Dodman.
Good morning.
How are you today?
I'm bright and bushy.
Okay. Normally, we're in a doghouse, but today we're in the cat house. We're going to be talking about cat behavior problems and how they can cause, or one causes the other. Medical problems cause behavior problems, and I think that behavior problems can wind up causing medical issues.
That's true. That's completely right.
Okay. So I'm not an expert in cat behavior, so hopefully you can help me learn more about them today, along with our listeners. And I know that just like with dogs, cats can also show aggression toward their owners. When this happens, should medical problems automatically be suspected?
I think so. I think, every time an animal displays, animal, cat, or dog, or horse for that matter, displays some, unusual or aberrant or excessive behavior, that certainly it's worth just, considering, at least sometimes just briefly, could there be a medical basis for this? And sometimes it's clearly not, because, it's just something that, maybe aggression in a cat that always was aggressive since it was a kitten, and he's just a little feisty and scratches people, and he's a bit of a nipper, and there's no real reason to suspect it, that the medical condition could be involved. But sometimes you get, say a classical case would be a cat who's 5 years old, who's never been aggressive to anybody ever before, and suddenly is explosively aggressive and violent and remains agitated for a long period of time. Then it's worth perhaps having that cat checked by the vet. And you can't always find things, but it's worthwhile checking before going on the next step if you're a trainer.
Okay. And so what kind of tests would you recommend that be run on a cat that is showing sudden aggression toward the owners?
Well, just the routine. First of all, a good clinical history is what I would take. Make sure I have everything completely buttoned down in terms of what's happened in the cat's house. Is there anything unusual going on? Has it been eating any strange food, changes in food, or been exposed to any pesticides or some such? Get all the history out of the way. Then the cat should have a physical examination, starting at the mouth and right down to the tip of the tail, listening for everything, heart murmurs, lung sounds, palpating abdomen, looking into the eyes, just a nose-to-tail exam, and blood work, So CBC, it's a complete blood count, chemistry profile, and thyroid. And thyroid is a biggie for cats because they very often go hyperthyroid, which can change behavior and increase aggression. So I'd certainly be looking out for that in an older cat.
Mm-hmm. In an old cat. So when you say old, what age are we talking about?
Sort of anything over 10, you know, 9, 10, 11, 12, 14.
Okay.
You know, that sort of age.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not so much in younger cats, but if you have an older cat who's maybe a bit skinny, has a voracious appetite, sometimes goes completely loony and runs around the house at 90 miles an hour, and displays aggression, not sort of spontaneous, but when handled is extremely aggressive and it's kind of out of character.
Mm-hmm.
All these things indicate possibly thyroid dysfunction, which in cats is always high. You know, if the thyroid is, well, maybe I should never say always, but usually cats go hyperthyroid.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Very unusual to find a cat that goes hypothyroid, and the reverse is true in dogs. They're always hypo and very rarely go hyper.
Yeah, and I want to make mention, too, that when we see dogs that have sudden change in behavior, thyroid is also a suspect, because when dogs go hypothyroid, their behavior can change drastically. And I've seen dogs where once they're put on medication, as long as the aggression hasn't happened for a long, long time, you know, the prognosis is really good once they go on medication to straighten that out.
That's true. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, like dogs, I know that dogs can redirect aggression onto an innocent bystander. And I read that cats can also redirect aggression. Is this a situation where a vet exam would also be indicated?
You know, sometimes this is so clear that you can almost at least temporarily bypass a veterinary exam, because the history of redirected aggression in a cat, which incidentally is really quite common, especially in a cat who's a little, you know, anxious or jumpy, you know, one who you would say is, using proper scientific language, they call it non-equable. You know, he does not have an even mood, but can be easily stimulated, fly off the handle type thing.
Mm-hmm.
A cat like this, the hallmark of redirected is 1 minute they're fine, and then the next minute life just, it's like a paradigm shift. The cat's now completely different. So a typical story sometimes witnessed would be two cats sitting on a windowsill looking out, and something happens outside. There's some wild animal comes and makes rude faces, and one of the cats gets really riled and can't get at the animal outside the window, so turns around and beats up his best friend.
Right.
Sometimes people see this, and other times they have two cats who formerly were mutually bonded, closest to friends. They go out on a Saturday at 2 o'clock, and they come back at 5 o'clock, and there's fur lying around all over the place, and there's been this, you know, terrible cat fight, and one's hiding and the other's hissing, and they go, what on earth happened?
Mm-hmm.
That's typical for redirected aggression. Mm-hmm. From cat to cat.
Mm-hmm.
But of course they can also redirect onto people, as I reported in the book The Cat Who Cried for Help.
Okay.
Some poor woman who was watching her cat on the windowsill, it turned around and attacked her.
Wow.
And another cat who was presented with a baby for the first time saw this baby, started to get really riled, and the woman saw it happening and said, take the baby out quick. So they went out, but now the cat redirected its ire onto her, and she was stuck in the kitchen for 7 hours defending herself with a broom.
7 hours?
7 hours, because cats take a long time to come down. You know, dogs typically wear their heart on their sleeve, and they get riled, and they're almost unriled as fast as they get riled. But cats, it sort of lingers. So you can actually have cats that, again, reported in the book, but I've seen many times, where they remain agitated even the next day.
Oh, my goodness. So this is a physiological response to this anger or frustration, whatever they're feeling. You know, I heard a story, too, about a cat who redirected onto their owner, and I had never heard that cats remained in that mental state of mind for hours on end. And like you said, that's so different from dogs. Dogs can redirect, you know, their anger or frustration, and then within 5 minutes, they're back kissing your face. So, you know, is this because their chemistry is so different? Their brain networking is so different?
Well, I don't think anybody really knows, but that probably is the case, and when you think about it, they do have different ethological, sort of natural type behaviors. I mean, dogs typically, you know, hunt their prey and are coordinated and, you know, sort of social animals. Cats quite easily can become independent, isolated, and like their big cat cousins, spend a fair amount of time lying around and sort of contemplating things, followed by sudden bursts of extraordinary activity and speed. I mean, they're the sprinters, and the dogs are really the long-distance runners, so they are geared differently.
Mm-hmm. So with this woman who was in her kitchen defending herself for 7 hours, the cat just calmed down on its own, or did she do anything proactive at that time to get the cat to calm down?
Just waited, and, eventually, as they say, it will pass. So eventually, with nothing happening, you know, holding, really the broom was to defend herself, and she couldn't move, because if she moved, she felt that she was going to get attacked, and the cat just sat there and sort of stared her down, and she waited and waited and waited. Eventually, the cat got fed up and walked away, and then she was safe.
Oh, my goodness. So, what was the outcome, if you don't mind my asking? Did she continue living with this cat? Did you have to do anything medically or with medication or anything with this cat?
No. What happens, redirected aggression, if you see the first incident, like I saw my own cats did it, and they saw another cat, which I saw through a fly screen on a warm summer night, and these cats was mother and daughter, mutually bonded, saw this other cat, attacked each other, big puffy tails, pupils dilated. I knew that uncharacteristically they would attack me if I touched them,
right,
because they were so riled.
Right.
I sort of shooed them into different parts of the house, shut the door. If you interrupt it, in other words, you don't sort of allow it to become interactive, the aggression, oftentimes it will subside, and then it's over. So the next day with my two cats, after keeping them separate overnight, I put their food bowl somewhat tentatively down on a countertop where they usually ate, and they both jumped up on the counter. One ate on one side, one on the other side. It was all over. It never happened again. Mm-hmm. I would say if it happens once, like the lady with the baby, that in a similar circumstance, it could happen again.
But like I said,
if you interrupt it very, you don't feed into it. You don't allow cats to keep beating each other up, or the woman didn't come at the cat with a broom and actually hit it or anything, it will eventually subside, and then things are back to normal until the next time.
Oh, my goodness. What a horrendous situation that must have been. I wonder.
Well, I've seen worse. I've seen people running out of their houses, out of a room, with the cat flying out of the air and sticking on their back like Zorro and sort of running down their back with claws, and they're screaming, and they go out and they shut the door. And then they come back hours later, and the cat's thumping on the other side of the door trying to get at them.
Oh, God. That's horrible. I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to Thursday in the Doghouse, which today is now a cat house, with Rini Premeza, the Jersey dog trainer, and Dr. Nicholas Dodman from Tufts Cummings University in Massachusetts. We're talking about cat behavior and cat medical issues today. Also want to let you know that we're airing live today, and if you have an interest in calling the station and asking Dr. Dodman a question about your cat, you can give us a call at 856-227-1360. That number again is 856-227-1360. Give us a call if you have a question about your cat. All right, so how common is it for cats to soil the house rather than going into their litter box? And what is the treatment for this behavior problem?
Well, not using the litter box, so some people just call it house soiling, is the number one behavior problem of cats. I mean, some people would say, well, it's maybe tied with aggression, but it's certainly extremely common, and anybody who's in cat behavior, a trainer or some such, must know how to deal with it. And there are several reasons. I mean, one of them, which you have to always rule out, is possibly medical. Like if a cat has a bladder infection, it'll be caught short and have sort of irritating feelings and produce small volumes of urine. That can lead to house soiling. So we rule out medical things, also kidney disease and diabetes. We also consider, usually very briefly, whether it could be hormonal, because if you have an unneutered male cat it's almost duty bound to spray around the house, causing a big stink, literally. But ruling out medical and hormonal, the next common cause of not using the litter box is just that the people have got litter boxes that really are not suitable for the cat. And there's a whole laundry list of things that people do wrong, and that just because they don't understand, the box can be too small. The box can be in the wrong location. You're like down in the basement next to a boiler or something. Mm. People use the wrong kind of litter. They use this coarse grain litter, which is uncomfortable to stand on. They use a depth that's too shallow. They have crystals in it that stink of lavender, which cats don't like. They like cat smells, not human perfumey smells.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes people put on a lid so they don't have to look at or smell what's inside, but that makes it like a sort of a porta potty, and it sort of stinks inside, so the cat turns his nose up and
is
pretty fussy, and on and on. The wrong number of litter boxes,
right.
And you have to have one more box than you have cats in the house, and so on. So usually just doing what I call the shell game with the litter boxes, rearranging them, making sure they've got sufficient pleasant litter inside, will solve that problem. I don't think I ever have not been able to solve that particular problem.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's another reason, which is marking, and that's a whole different situation where cats actually will use their litter box, but in addition to that, they leave little urine marks around, or sometimes even fecal marking is much less common, just to mark their territory like dogs do.
Wow. And so with the spraying, what is the purpose for them to spray if they don't have another cat in the house?
It's to send a signal. I mean, they don't seem to figure it out that there's there's no other cat. They're almost on autopilot, that if something upsets them, if there's some sort of challenge from outside, whether it's a cat or some wild animal outside, and they feel threatened, they're duty bound to mark, in that case, the periphery
mm-hmm.
of their dwelling or their territory.
Okay.
In that case, you get urine marks on windowsills, micro blinds, baseboards, drapes, oftentimes around windows or doors, and that tells you that it's something outside, and they're leaving a little olfactory message. It's almost like handwriting for us. Handwriting is a message that we can write and then go away and the message remains.
Right.
But they do this little writing. It's almost like the mark of Zorro was mm-hmm. what I called that chapter in the book.
Mm-hmm.
So they leave this little mark, and actually they'll go back and freshen it up so that it remains good, and it's like, Kilroy is here, or Kilroy lives here.
Right.
Sometimes they mark in other areas, though. So with urine marking, it's always interesting locations. So with a plain old, badly arranged litter box situation, they just find a piece of carpet somewhere and go there. It's kind of rather uninteresting. But with urine marking, it's always strategic, and when people tell you the locations of the urine marks, you can figure out oftentimes what is causing the cat the angst. So you will find, for example, marking sometimes on people's clothes, sometimes on beds, sometimes on furniture, sometimes briefcases, computer keyboards, stovetops, heating registers. There's a whole list of about 20 or 30 things that are very commonly hit. And sometimes if it's on some personal item belonging to a person, the anxiety somehow relates to that person. Either they don't like the person and they want them to go away, or they do like the person and they want to identify with them. And lots of different messages.
Good heavens. So with the spraying, now, is this strictly with an intact male, or it can happen with a neutered male too?
It could happen with a neutered male. I mean, the fact is that neutering is 90% effective at stopping spraying urine marking mm-hmm. in a male cat.
Okay.
But that leaves 10%, and that's a lot of cats, because most cats in this country are neutered, and yet this still is a pretty major league problem.
Mm-hmm.
A female cat who marks around the time of estrus, if you spay that cat, then really that problem is pretty much resolved. But both neutered male and female can still urine mark out of anxiety and sort of stress and territorial concerns, and that often is the situation. So, it would be a lucky day for me if I had a male cat come in and he was not neutered, and they said he's spraying in the house. I said, well, you neuter him, they say, oh, what a good idea, and they do that, I've got a 90% chance of solving that problem right there and then.
Right.
But that isn't always, nearly always isn't the case. Usually it's a neutered cat, and we try and decide what the cause of the cat's stress is, and we try and address it as far as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't always address it. So if the stress is a new baby has arrived in the house, you can't throw away the baby, and you don't want to throw away the cat. So they're going to have to get on in the same airspace. So you can try some counter-conditioning, you know, learning techniques that the baby means good things.
Mm-hmm.
But oftentimes it does come down to medication. And this was a condition which actually caused a lot of owners to surrender their cats because they thought that it was impossible to resolve, and they'd worked with litter boxes and different types of litter and nothing worked. But if it is genuinely urine marking, if you treat it with Prozac or the veterinary version, which is called Reconcile,
yes,
you can have about nearly all cats respond with a 90 to 100% cure.
Really?
Yeah, so it's very, very effective.
That is effective.
To treat them that way.
Now, would they, if they got rid of the habit, let's say, of spraying, would they be able to get off of the medication in time?
Or some can and some can't. So, you know, if the stress, whatever the stress was that triggered the spraying, was kind of transient, you know, maybe you have a visitor come into your house and the cat starts to spray, and now the cat's kind of on autopilot spraying all the time, you can interrupt that sequence with Prozac, and once the person's moved out, you can taper the dose down, and everything remains intact. Let's say 50% of cats.
Okay.
But the other 50%, the stress is ongoing. The cat feels better, is less stressed,
mm-hmm.
has less need for territorial marking when treated with Prozac, and in that case, the treatment might have to be ongoing.
I see. And so for the dog that's marking their territory, the cat who's marking its territory because it's got another cat in the house, you said they do fecal marking. So can they aim their excrement to be on walls and furniture and things like that, or?
Not so much walls. I mean, they spray urine onto walls and vertical surfaces as well as horizontal surfaces. But fecal marking is usually on a flat surface. But the only way you can tell that that's what it is there's usually some history of some sort of different thing going on, like, you know, a boyfriend stays over and the cat's not thrilled with this person. And when he leaves his bed with the sheets thrown back and right kind of in the imprint of where this person was, right slap bang in the middle, like a thumb sticking up, there is this big pile of feces. You go, like, goodness sakes. And it clearly is strategic. It's like an iceberg floating in the sheets.
Oh, my God.
So it's like literally, you know, there's mud in your eye.
Oh, my goodness gracious. This leaves a lot of question as to whether or not people might decide not to get a cat.
Well, they don't do it. This is a pretty uncommon thing, but
well, thank
I should
goodness
tell you,
for that.
It's kind of not nice to know, but actually humans do the same thing.
Oh, you got to be kidding me, right?
No, when houses are broken into, the police tell me, and when cars are stolen, very frequently humans will desecrate the space with urine or feces before they take off.
Oh, my God, I never heard that.
Yeah, I was just hearing it actually the other day on NPR. I was coming down the road. They were saying this one of the guy who almost invented sort of forensic medicine was investigating a murder case, and there'd been this terrible murder, and he found a pile of human feces at the site.
Wow.
And he'd got it and studied it under the microscope and found pinworms in it. And then they found the six people who were likely culprits, and they took fecal samples from all six of them, and one of them had pinworms, and then he admitted.
Wow.
So, you know, he left his mark, but he was caught because of it. I should say cats in the house who mark for any reason, particularly urine, the usual stressor is other cats.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be issues between cats in the house,
mm-hmm.
like someone's getting beaten up, and you know, not all cats really enjoy being together. We
mm-hmm.
think they all will enjoy it because they're cats and they have little personalities, and sometimes they just don't like another cat, and that causes stress.
Right.
Other times it's cats outside the window, but cats is a very common cause. Other cats is a very common cause of stressor for urine marking.
Wow. Well, you know, dogs urine mark, too, when there's competition going on with their housemate, if it's a dog, and sometimes having more than one animal in the house is not really the right thing to do, because it does create competition.
Yeah, it's very important, I think, when you're bringing in a new cat or a dog into a multi-animal household, to make sure that the marriage is going to work by having a little test period and maybe keeping them relatively separate to start with, so that there's no fights or anything right up front,
mm-hmm.
and then slowly introduce them under pleasant circumstances. But it's true with cats, there are some cats who nature has slated to really enjoy each other's company. They have what's called preferred associates. You and I would call it friends.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's other cats who statistically and significantly choose to spend more time separated from each other, and so we would call them enemies or non-preferred associates. They don't like that other cat. So if you get one who nature is slated to be one the cat doesn't like, and you bring it and you force them to live in the same house, it would be the same sort of stress as it would be if, you know, I yanked someone off the street and had them move into your apartment. You know, you may or may not like that person.
Wow.
If you don't like them, it's a real problem.
Sure. Absolutely. You know, when I saw the review for your book, The Cat Who Cried for Help, I noticed that you address issues where cats yowl at night. What causes that?
Well, there's several reasons. I mean, the book was called The Cat Who Cried for Help, and that cat was actually, it was a tragic story about a cat who was found in an alley, and the woman, I guess she was trying to be kind, she rescued the cat and put it in a carrier and took it back to her small apartment with paper-thin walls. The first thing she did was neuter the cat. Okay, that's a responsible thing to do because
right.
it was an intact male.
Right.
Second thing she did was she had it declawed, which I don't approve of.
Okay.
And the third thing is, because the cat was yowling at night, she asked the surgeons here at Tufts to devocalize the cat.
Oh, God.
Which actually ended up, she insisted, despite what I told her, she managed to find a veterinary surgeon who would devocalize the cat. So this cat was, quote, saved by being castrated, declawed, devocalized, and then she had the cheek to come back to me and ask me for drugs to stop the cat from yowling at night.
Oh, my goodness.
So now she wanted to drug it because it was playing. It was silent, but it was playing with its toys, and she wanted it to be drugged through the night. So that wasn't really a good way of being saved. That cat was an outdoor cat. He was missing his buddies outside, and being sort of crepuscular, which means more active in the dawn and dusk,
mm-hmm.
and the dim light times,
mm-hmm.
that's the way cats are. They're not truly nocturnal, but in those evening times and early morning times, the cat would normally be roaming and wandering. He was prevented from doing so by the four walls of a small apartment,
mm-hmm.
and he cried to his buddies for help, or at least acknowledgement, and that was the lead chapter. Sometimes cats cry at night for other reasons, right up to and including Alzheimer's disease, which I witnessed with my own cat, who was 19 and was perfectly silent at night all her life.
Doctor,
at the end, I was hearing,
oh, God. Dr. Dodman, we have less than a minute. I'm sorry. I have to stop us. I thank you so much for joining us today in the doghouse, making this a very pleasant cat house, and we learned tremendous amount of information today. And I hope that you'll join us again, and thank you very much, and we'll talk to you soon.
I'd love to join you again.
Thank you. Thank you very much for listening to us today. I hope that you'll tune in again next week. There's my cue. Time to leave. Hope you'll join us next week. I promise we'll have another interesting show for you. I hope you get out, exercise your dogs, play with your cats, and have a great week.